This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me
Jackie Sayers.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Jackie and Robin, you both came out here from the UK, but at different times, didn't you? When did you come out, Jackie?
1958.
And why was that?
I'd been nursing in London, and my friend and I were going to finish our training and come and nurse in New Zealand. But I married a serviceman, and she married a serviceman, so we didn't actually do that. But when I met my husband, he was wanting to come to New Zealand, so those two things went together.
Oh, okay. Well, what was the motive to come to New Zealand? You'd already decided you wanted to come to New Zealand.
I wanted to come to a country without a class system.
Ah, okay. So what, did you grew up in London?
No, I grew up in Sandhurst in Berkshire.
Okay.
Next door to the Royal Military Academy, or college as it was called.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So what was your experience of the class system?
Well, my mother was in service. She started work at 12 as a scullery maid and rose eventually to a position of head housemaid to the commandant at Sandhurst. And my father worked there and they met, hence me. My family are army background.
Okay.
So the army is very class conscious and there's a whole servant thing. So, yes, I'd spent a life of being told that I had been born into a certain station in life and I had no right to rise above it.
Ah.
That was the message I got from my family.
So is that the sort of upstairs, downstairs?
Absolutely.
Sort of
if you've seen Upstairs, Downstairs or Downton Abbey, that's my mother's background, yes.
Okay. So they had respect for the upper classes then, or...?
Yes, because they were the bosses, yes, you know.
Okay, and there was very little, so it was upper and lower and not much middle in your mind?
I would say there was the whole range, you know. I would say we were, if you'd seen that skit with John Cleese and the two Ronnies, with the different hats that they put on.
Oh, I am upper, I am middle, I am lower,
That's right. And even within each class, there's other classes as well. So suppose we were the middle-lower
middle.
class. Something like that.
Okay.
But very much. My father used to doff his hat to officers and things like that. Yeah,
okay.
So I grew up with that.
So that was the family environment. But what about school then?
Well, primary school was all the local kids. But then I went to grammar school when I was 11. And
so grammar school meant that you passed the 11 plus and you were one of the more able.
I was one of the first in England in 1946, was it? That when the 11 plus came out, to actually go from the working class to a grammar school, yes, on 11 plus, yeah.
So was that very difficult for you?
Well, it was, because the school I went to had been privatised. Yes. So all of the other girls had been private students before they became was state controlled.
So how did they react to you?
Well, I did hear one of them say once, the school's never been the same since they let the working class in.
Yes, yeah.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my cohorts in my year, we were all from the local villages that had passed 11 plus.
Ah, okay. So you all got on well together as a group? You were
As we went through the school.
Yeah. So did that mean that you had different aspirations than your parents, or was there a conflict with your parents?
Yes, there was, I think, because neither of my parents got educated beyond the age of 12 and 13, and I think they found it difficult, you know, about me getting ideas above my station.
Yes, yes.
So there was that kind. They were proud, but I don't remember them ever coming to the school for any. I think they might have come once for a prize giving.
Parent teachers and
yes,
things would be difficult.
Nothing like that.
Yes,
no.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it did cause a bit of tension there.
Yeah.
But they were very proud.
Yes. So, but it made it harder for you to relate to them, or them to relate to you, do you think?
Well, there was the difference between, you know, I'd get excited about things.
Yes.
And my mother would say, now, calm down, dear, calm down.
Okay. But what about, so were your parents interested in music and literature and so on?
No.
No,
no,
not at all.
No. William Shakespeare was called Willy Wobble Arrow. And when I was learning French, I got kind of laughed at. So it wasn't easy.
Okay. Yeah. So what motivated you then?
I liked school. I liked learning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
I was a student. I did my homework.
You were keen on it, yeah.
Yeah, I worked hard.
Okay. So now, given the timing that you're talking about, you also grew up during the war.
Yes, I did.
So is that something that stands out in your mind?
Oh, absolutely, because I would have been 4 or 5 when the war started and I was 10, 11 when it finished. So I have very distinct memories of the war.
Such yes. as?
Having a good time.
Yes.
Because we were left to our own devices, because most of the men were away at war or they were working. My father was a cook, cooking for the soldiers.
Yeah.
And the kids we just used to play in the out in the woods where all the soldiers were, because I lived next door to the military camp, you see.
Yeah, okay. So there was no bombing or anything?
I've got distinct memories of sleeping in the cupboard under the stairs when the doodle bugs were coming over.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And the college was bombed, but Robin's probably got, she's younger than me, but she's got memories of that, I would think.
Do you, Robin?
Yes, I do.
You do? Okay.
Memories that I didn't even know I had.
Yes.
Because I was that much younger than Jackie, so I was only a year when war broke out.
Yeah.
Old.
Okay.
But it's just little things that we were evacuated.
From where to
from
where?
From London.
From London?
Yeah, I grew up in London. Oh,
and you were evacuated to
London.
Where?
We were evacuated to North Yorkshire.
Oh, okay.
And,
yeah,
yeah, and another little village. We evacuated twice, my older sister and myself.
Hmm.
And, yeah, we were treated well. I don't know that I had any real feelings about homesickness particularly. One lived in the village and my sister wasn't actually billeted with me that time, and I had to go across the green, village green, to visit, and there was geese on the green.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it terrified me, these geese, because yes. I wouldn't have been that big myself.
Yes, they could be big.
Yeah, and then when we were in North Yorkshire, they started to bomb the railway sidings.
Yes.
And my mum said, no, she said, if you're going to be bombed, you might as well be bombed back in London with me. So
yes, yeah,
we went back to London. But I have memories of sleeping under the stairs.
Yes.
Also
okay.
memories.
So in London, that wouldn't have been during the Blitz then, would it? Or
it would have been.
It was after,
no,
presumably.
Well, we were being bombed, but our area, because it was mostly the East End.
Yes. Yeah.
We were Greater London. We were
the okay.
West.
Yeah. So a bit
but yeah, there definitely was bombing and lots of bombed out houses.
Okay.
And I said to my mother, I can remember sleeping under the bed. And she thought about it for a long time. She said, no, that would have been, I can't remember the name of it. There was a big metal, like a table.
Ah,
and
yes.
A lot of people used them as tables.
Yeah.
And we used to go underneath, and you had wire wove underneath.
Oh,
my impression
okay.
was we were sleeping under the bed, but of course we weren't.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So were you away from your parents for an extended time?
Yeah, probably, I don't know, maybe 9, 12 months at a time.
Okay. So reconnecting, it wasn't too much of an issue, or?
Not really. I don't remember ever being traumatised by it.
Yeah, okay.
I remember my grandmother used to have American soldiers to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them would sit there and comb our hair and things, you know, talk about their children and, you know, the age of their children.
Yeah.
I have vague memories of the Gula Bugs because when the planes go up and they, you know, they cut their engine for the parachutists to jump out, I sit there with almost holding my breath.
Mm.
It's just, they're there without you realising it.
Okay. And your father was around as well with you?
No, he was away. Well, he must have come home once. I've got a younger sister. he was away most of the time.
So serving or?
Yeah, serving. He was in the engineers.
Oh, so whereabouts?
He used to tell us about. He was in Egypt, all that area, for quite some time. And he told us that he used to put up poles for wires, for signals.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next thing you know, you're taking them down because the.
Move somewhere else. So with him, you would have not seen him for quite an extended period.
We didn't really know him when he came back. In fact, my younger sister, because my grandmother had all these different servicemen, she was waiting for him to go back so that you could have somebody nice, because this one kept telling her what to do.
So was it hard adjusting to him being back with you after the war?
Not really. I think I just... It's a person that takes things as they come. He was there. And I got on quite well with my father, though he was rather Victorian. Very set ways of manners and behaviour. Children should be seen and not heard. But then... Because we were three girls, I was his boy, and I'd go out and help him and fiddle with things and hand him tools. And
To some extent, that was the time of Dr. Spock with the idea you should have a regimented upbringing of children,
I think he was the youngest son of a Victorian family. And my grandmother always reminded me of Queen Victoria. She used to sit dressed in black in a black chair with a black dog.
Okay, was he one of those large families that you mean, or?
He was a member of. He was the youngest
of nine, so quite an age spread as well, I should think. Yeah. So, do you know if he found it hard adjusting back to?
I think looking back, some of his. Some of his reactions and that, and his strictness, had something to do with the wartime and what he'd seen and what he, and of course they didn't talk about it, so it was buried.
Do you know if he saw much conflict there or combat?
He didn't actually in the fighting, but it was very close.
Support. Yes.
You know, just a few things he said about these poles going up and then going down.
They were
frantically doing it, you know, one way or the other.
It
was a lot of tension.
Yeah. Often it's not stated how many support people you need for a combat army. In fact, there are relatively fewer in frontline combat, but But even so, I think it can have an effect.
They're pretty close.
As soon as
there's open ground, then they put the signals up.
And things can be quite fluid, Okay, so you grew up in London. And did you have an ambition early on to come out to New Zealand as well?
As a teenager, I wasn't particularly coming to New Zealand. I was going to... travel around the world, and I was going to take 2.5 years to do it.
Okay. Was that normal? I mean, now there's the gap year sort of idea, but in Britain.
Probably
but.
Not. I think because some of my father's family had gone to Australia, and at one point my parents talked about going to Australia. And my younger sister was going to dangle her feet over the side of the boat all the way over. Having been on the boat in the River Thames.
Yes, not realising the size of it.
No, but I don't think it was normal to want to... No, I don't say it wasn't normal. It wasn't general that people wanted to particularly travel.
So growing up in Britain, your school years would have been after the war, still through rationing and so on.
Oh, yes.
So, and there was a lot of bomb sites that were still being cleared and developed.
We used to play on bomb sites. I know we weren't supposed to, but we did.
Well, I think I thought they were major play areas actually. those sorts of things.
Mm.
Yeah. So I suppose you just treated that as normal life. That's what the world's like.
Yeah. And we were original latchkey kids, I guess.
Yeah.
Mum worked during the war, and she just never stopped working. She worked at for the GPO.
That's the general post office.
Like we have little chips. I mean, there were bigger chips then. Mm. So she worked in an area where it was completely sterile with these start of little chips.
But computerized things?
But that type of thing, the early stages of that.
That was in the 1950s.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting because I first came across some of the early computing when we were given courses in COBOL and ALGOL and some of the early languages in the mid 1960s when it was just becoming more popular.
She worked in this sterile area with the case and gloves and all this sort of
thing. Okay, all right. Cutting edge work. Yes. Yeah, I suppose it would be. Now, we talked a bit about class with Jackie. What's your experience of class in Britain?
Well, I don't remember any class distinction. I mean, I suppose we were probably middle class with Mum and Dad both working.
Yeah.
So we were
middle class. So your father worked as an engineer after the war, or...?
He worked electrical engineer. He did a lot of the neon signs around Wembley Stadium.
Oh, okay.
Things like that.
Yeah.
But, I don't remember. We lived in a flat, the lady downstairs, Mrs. Fox, took me with her once to visit her sister, who was in service in this big house.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea of any sort of class distinction, so it didn't bother me. And supposedly, I was privileged, because the lady of the house asked to see me and talk to me because I was outside playing ball. And the thing was those two balls that we used to play, two balls up the wall and juggle, and we used to do it all the time as kids. And she'd seen this and was fascinated. So Mrs. Fox told me afterwards, I was very privileged to be able to speak to the lady of the house. But it didn't occur to me that it was anything different to talking to anybody else.
Yeah, I think that's it maybe. If you're in contact across the classes, Jackie, like your parents were, then you notice it a lot more. Otherwise, you probably ignore it. I grew up in an area you mix with other people in the same environment. And I noticed, coming to New Zealand, for me, I felt it didn't have the same sort of class distinctions, but it also meant there was the idea we're all the same, whereas in Britain, class meant partly there were hierarchies, but also you could have different ways of living by different groups at the same time, even at the same level. So it allowed a diversity that probably wasn't so accepted in New Zealand. No. But, okay. Now, let's see. So how did you got married and came out to New Zealand with your husband?
No, my husband came out first. He came out in the beginning of 1958, and I followed later on in the year, about 10 months later, with our eldest daughter as a service wife on the Captain Cook
in
November 1958.
Ah, yeah, one of the Captain Cook group. Did you ever go to the reunions?
I did.
Yeah, so you'd know Alan Caddick.
I can't remember the names now, but yeah. I did go to the original meetings.
Okay.
Right when they started it, yes. And I went to two reunions.
Yes, okay, yeah, because he was one of the organisers of the reunions.
I didn't know them personally, but I certainly was there.
Yeah, he said they got large reunions going, and people came expecting to meet all the people on their voyage, and found there were lots from different voyages and hardly any that they knew, for some of them. But yes, it was a big a lot came out on that ship.
Yes, so. It was the all the immigrant program that went on during whatever period of time it was. There's a book about it called A Long Way for Seven. Sevenpence by Megan Hutchins,
yes.
and it's a history of the people. The Captain Cook was the one that bought the most.
Yeah.
So there was a whole load of boats, but the Captain Cook did most of you know, the majority, or a major part of that.
So it's a bit of a shame for you, the voyage. Your husband was already here, and you were coming on your own a long ship.
Well, they
voyage.
Were supposed to come out here and find somewhere for us to live. You see.
Yeah.
Okay. And then when they, whatever, and then we could come out. Yes.
Yeah. So what was the voyage like for you then, was it?
Well, I have 5 weeks of water and a crawling baby on a boat.
Yes, yeah.
In a cabin about the size of an ensuite.
Yes.
A modern bathroom.
Yeah.
With six bunks, a mother and a child, a mother and child, and a small basin.
Oh,
and
right.
Shared facilities. You know, in terms of toilets and showers somewhere else. Yes, it was.
So it wasn't quite the big holiday that some people had. Not quite the big holiday that some
people
had.
It wasn't like one of the, you know, cruise ships that you see now. It was one class up from a cattle ship, I think. You know, we had dinner and we were served at table and food like that. But it was all immigrants.
Yes, so activities and things, you'd be mainly just busy with the young child.
We're looking after our children, but there were activities there, you know. Things were put on at night and dances and things like that, yes. And that's when we got our lessons about New Zealand being a place where there was no racial problems, and Māori and Pākehā didn't marry, and, you know, it was all perfect.
They didn't marry each other, but...
No. According to what we were told, yes.
Yeah, okay.
And they, you know, we lived separately.
Yeah. So what were you told about... Were you told anything about how to adjust to New Zealand, or...?
No, we had no information. All the information I had about New Zealand was a book I borrowed from the library in my hometown, and it was... When did the Queen come? 1953?
Yes.
I remember there was a picture of the Queen with all these people there called Maoris in grass skirts.
Yes.
And there were lots of sheep. And that's about my total knowledge of New Zealand before I came here.
Yeah, because I know some migrants were told, I think the Dutch migrant mentioned, they were told, forget about where you come from, you're going to be in New Zealand now, so adjust to New Zealand, and that's your home, but... nothing like that.
My husband had been here before briefly, but I didn't know anything. I was just the excitement of something new.
Going somewhere different.
Palm trees and tropical islands and, you know.
Did you stop at places on the way over? Did you get a look around?
We went through the Panama Canal
and
we stopped somewhere there and got off the boat and had a little tour around. But after leaving Panama, it was 3 weeks of water.
Yes.
And believe you me, when you've been on the water and the loudspeaker system says, come up on deck and you will see Aotearoa, the land of the long white cloud.
Yeah.
And I burst into tears because I thought we might miss it and end up somewhere else. So it was quite a relief.
Yeah, okay. But your journey, Robbie, was somewhat later.
Yeah,
63. Okay.
We came out in the Southern Cross in 63. July, we got to Wellington.
Mm-hmm.
Wellington turned on an absolutely beautiful day. I know now that it probably had a frost in the morning.
Yes,
it was clear blue sky with the white clouds sitting on the hills.
Yeah. So was your journey very enjoyable then? Or?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
So. I had two children, 2 and 4.
Mm.
And there was a nursery, so they went in the nursery at times.
Yes.
Not all the time, but just little times, which meant that we had time to play maybe deck games, or I could read a book or something like that.
Mm.
And it was a one-class cruise ship, really. You know, we had swimming pools and libraries and, totally different to...
And
they were, you know, general passengers as well as...
So, and did you get to know many of the other... Are you still in contact with any others from the airport?
Well, one couple we got to know quite well because we had sat on their table for dinner.
Yeah.
Because the children were fed first and then they were put to bed.
Okay.
And the stewards were on the deck, you know, each deck, so that they would let us know if children...
If there's any issues,
And then we had our meal... and this other couple, they had two children, two boys, and for years after we came to New Zealand, we had Christmases together because neither of us had family. Sadly, they've both died now.
And that's another area to explore, the connections back to England and so on. This is part one of four. Tune in next week for part two. Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.